Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Oh, Nancy, it was so much fun because I love talking to kindred spirits about my favorite subject. There were a couple times where I felt I wasn't explaining things enough because you got it. You got it before I had to go into any great details. And I know my day is off to a really good start.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Barbara Winter is joining me today from Valencia, California, which is in Los Angeles County. Barbara is a pioneering self-employment advocate, writer, and teacher who has spent the last 30 years pondering the question, why aren't we all self-employed? Helping others discover the joyfully jobless life is her favorite occupation. To readers of Winning Ways newsletter, the longest-running self-employment publication of its kind, she is editor and publisher. Readers of Making a Living Without a Job, a book that's been in print since 1993, know her as the author. Participants in Barbara's seminars of the same name, along with others, including Establish Yourself as an Expert in How to Support Your Wanderlust, know her as a passionate teacher. She also leads retreats to help small business owners bring creative thinking and fresh ideas into their work. She is convinced that small is too beautiful and loves working with one-person enterprises. You can work with her one-on-one for brainstorming sessions, which is her latest idea of how to work with people. Her name might be familiar if you're a longtime listener or even a one-year listener, because we had three conversations that aired last fall at this time, and we explored employee mindset versus entrepreneurial mindset. We talked about exploring multiple profit centers, what they are, and how to keep multiple profit centers going, and portfolios of inspiration, so ways in which you can capture your inspiration in a portfolio type way. Last weekend, Barbara and I were talking about, we hear from clients who are on two different ends of a continuum about ideas. The first side is, I have too many ideas and don't know what to do with them all. The second is not having enough ideas or a strategy to gather the ideas to help gel them into profit centers. Barbara's concept of becoming an idea detective is something that I felt would be fun to talk about and bring a couple conversations with you so that you could learn six steps to becoming an idea detective for yourself. So welcome to the program, Barbara Winter.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. And what's the weather like in California right now?
It's very hot, and I just saw online that there was a small earthquake not too far from me, so it's California.
Wow. That is really, unnerving.
I'm not very fond of earthquakes.
I think there's a huge population of people that would be in your same boat.
And we also have been dealing with a nearby big wildfire all weekend.
Oh,
425
wow.
acres, which is not too far from me, so our air quality is not great.
Well, and we experienced that with the fires in Canada. The winds came down, and it was like 2 to 3 weeks of really, smoky weather. So I was thinking it must be even more intense where you're at. Like, can you
I haven't been outside today, but yesterday I couldn't smell any smoke. and it isn't hazy looking, so it must be blowing in a different direction. It's very quiet here. There isn't any big wind, but the Santa Anas are coming back, so that means we'll have more wildfires and all sorts of fun stuff like that.
Yeah, it's just enough already.
Yeah.
Push to the limit. Well, today you and I are going to talk about the three of the six steps to becoming an idea detective. The first one is finding your curiosity. You've got decades of working with people all over the world. You're a world traveler, haven't since 2020, but you have been online with people from overseas and all around the world. What are you finding about curiosity that it seems to be relating on the spectrum of either too many ideas or not enough ideas?
Well, I think that it's probably pretty equally balanced between those two sides. But I think also that one of the things that isn't talked about enough is that the job description of being an entrepreneur is bringing ideas to life. That's what we do. And, you know, if you read some of the books about starting a business, it sounds so boring. And there are formulas. And it's, you know, really rigid. And I think fighting that kind of assembly line thinking is something all of us have to deal with when we want to have a more creative occupation. And so our curiosity, when you think about it, you know, we're born curious. Anyone who's been around a two-year-old knows that what's that and why are recited many times during the day. And I think it starts pretty early in life with our busy parents not being able to answer our questions and pay enough attention to them. And by the time we get to school and we are in this educational system that, for efficiency's sake, is very rigid in many, many ways, we kind of quiet that voice and pay attention. Okay, I got to do this next. And curiosity is more wide open and looking all around wherever we are to see what's going on and pondering why something isn't the way it should be, or and so on and so forth, which really keeps our imaginations fed. So we have to, first of all, be aware of that, and then we have to say, I'm going to do it a different way, and I'm going to make friends with my curiosity again.
I think that's wonderful. I was really resonating with, it's part of our country's way in which we want to organize and compartmentalize all of our education.
Exactly.
And it's a way in which, you know, to develop profit centers, but there's email formulas. It proposes like there's only one way to do these things, and this formula's worked for me, therefore it will work for you, or it's worked for thousands of people, so I don't see why it wouldn't work for you. And while that formula is being rolled out and utilized by, you know, millions of people, people are noticing the pattern. And yeah, all the emails now are following certain systems and, you know, how many days and emails every 3 days and, you know, send them on Wednesdays or send them on Tuesday mornings or, you know, it's that kind of way in which we're trying to control the uncontrollable.
Exactly. I have to read something to you that popped up on Facebook yesterday that really says it in a wonderful way. And it's from Hugh MacLeod, who's a good writer. Everyone is born creative. Everyone is given a box of crayons in kindergarten. Then you hit puberty, and they take the crayons away and replace them with dry, uninspiring books on algebra, history, etc. Being suddenly hit years later with the creative bug is just a wee voice telling you, I'd like my crayons back, please.
That is so wonderful.
Isn't it wonderful? And I think that's really what we do as entrepreneurs. We get our crayons back.
Yeah, and explore the world kind of on our terms. And, you know, the natural instinct for an entrepreneur is to not do what's formulaic.
Right.
So this is why it's like ironic for me, like entrepreneurs, you know, are exploring, you know, different ways of doing things. And then they're distilling it down, which is a hugely beautiful creative process, and giving us the formula, which is very helpful, like especially, you know, if I came back to like the emails. But the natural tendency for the entrepreneur is to test the system and then break the system and rebuild it.
Exactly. Yes.
And so in what you just read from, what was the author's name again?
Hugh MacLeod.
Hugh MacLeod. Okay. It's like the same thing of, you know, the entrepreneur is taking their crayons back and
yep.
saying, now that I've learned the system, I want it back for myself and do it differently.
Yes.
So maybe that's the way, you know, well, that is the way of keeping innovation alive.
It is, but we also have to be conscious about doing that. You know, it's not an accidental process most of the time. It's that we have to stay on the alert and stay curious and keep searching for ideas. So, you know, what is more fun than being in a room with people talking about ideas?
Right.
It's, you know, the volume in the room goes up.
Right. I find myself like when I'm with the creators and idea generators, is that we feel like we're in, you know, the detectives of solving the world's problems.
Exactly.
We throw out all the ideas. And then when we walk away from the conversation, even though we haven't done anything, we feel so satisfied. It can be so satisfying. So step two is inviting ideas. So what are some of your suggestions for how we can, you know, stay fresh and work with the ideas and invite them in?
Well, first of all, it's, you know, think of our business as a laboratory, not an assembly line. And so be willing to experiment and, you know, try different things all the time. But when you're having, you know, thoughts like, oh, it's just an idea, or I don't have any ideas, that should be a reminder, well, let's start looking again and pay attention to capturing them. And so one of my favorite questions is to, and I ask myself this every morning when I wake up, well, what's missing? What do I want to change today? And it might be some simple little thing, but nevertheless, the fact that what's missing, always looking for how can I make it better, is a fine way to go through our lives. To keep things, you know, keep things moving.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And how do you get away from inertia or work through it?
That's a really good question to ask someone who has been in isolation for 19 months. And this last 19 months have been unlike anything I have ever experienced. And I think most of us feel that way. I mean, we have been dealing with a time that we never even contemplated coming to. And so I keep hearing Barbara Shear's constant reminder, isolation is the dream killer. And I found that being in isolation was very, very hard on my creativity for a while. And it was, I felt confused. It was like I was having feelings I hadn't really encountered before. And so I really started to do things that would, even with my restrictions, would open things up for me again. And one of those things that I did a lot during this time, I think I set a record for reading fiction. I read all the time, and a lot of nonfiction, because I am always recommending books in my newsletter and elsewhere. And I am very picky about the ones I recommend. And one of the books that's lying at my feet right now is a nonfiction book called Curious, mm-hmm. written by a British author. Unfortunately, I found the writing a little less than creative.
Okay.
It was a lot of statistics and that sort of thing, although I've gotten to the part of the book where he's talking more about keeping your curiosity alive. But I think that, you know, we have to, first of all, just assume responsibility for it. And even in these circumstances of being in the same place all the time, not having encounters in person with people, which I didn't do for, you know, most of this time, it's been something that I realized that I don't want to lose this. I want to keep it up.
Yeah.
And so it's been, you know, I've been reading an enormous amount of fiction, which I don't normally have time to do, and made the most amazing discovery, which I think I had realized it before, but it was kind of fresh again in all this fiction I was reading. How many fictional characters are self-employed? And I thought, well, that makes perfect sense. If you were going to write a fictional story about a person who was having interesting activities, it would be kind of hard to make that story about someone sitting in a cubicle somewhere.
Right.
Just like it is in real life, you know, that entrepreneurs really do have more adventures just in their daily business. And so that's been one of the things that has really fascinated me. I read a book, it's quite new, called The Last Bookshop in London, and which is about a young woman who comes from a small town and gets a job in this bookstore that's kind of falling apart. This old man runs it, and he just loves to read, but he doesn't really like taking care of the store too much. And she transforms it and really gets it to become a popular bookshop again after all the bombing that's gone on with World War II. And I got done reading that book, and I thought, this is like a basic course in how to build a business. And just all the different little things she did that started bringing people back into the store and, you know, just making it a more attractive place to come and browse. So, you know, it's just always being on the lookout for those kinds of things that remind us how powerful it is when we don't just give up.
Yeah. And one of the things that you did to work through your inertia was you came up with these brainstorming sessions.
And that was so interesting too. And I just sort of am amused by it, because when I started it, my family and friends all said, I can't believe you didn't think about this sooner. and I never had thought about it, you know, before. And it has been utterly fascinating, because every single person I've worked with, and there have been around 100, I think, so far, it has totally different kind of business and totally different area where they're stuck with that business. I've done it with several people from out of the U.S., and I did one a week or so ago, which was one of the rare ones where the person and I had actually met each other in the past. She was a woman from Wales who had taken a seminar from me in London several years ago and now lives in Italy and had started a business with a name that I just love, the Runaway Italian. And her plan was to do tours and retreats for women who wanted to see kind of off the beaten parts of Italy, which I thought was a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
And so we just had the best time coming up with ideas about how she could start moving it forward. So, you know, it's really just been a wonderful having these brainstorming sessions have really been a wonderful experience for me. And I assume for most of the participants as well, because when we can talk about our ideas with another entrepreneurial thinker, they often can see things that we're missing because they don't have the emotional attachment that we have to our business.
Yeah.
And sometimes that emotional attachment makes us more cautious than we need to be, or there are opportunities that are kind of hiding in plain sight. And someone who is an entrepreneurial thinker can often dig those out where we're missing it. And so having someone in our life on a regular basis who is also creatively self-employed can be one of the best gifts we give ourselves in our business. And then, of course, providing the same kind of support to them. It's powerful. I had two different friends at two different times in my life who were entrepreneurial. One who did something totally different from what I do, and one who did something very similar. But when I look back, those years when I had them to call up on the phone were powerful. And also when my business really took off. And I certainly give them a great deal of credit. I remember when I called my friend Chris one night and she answered the phone and I said, "Make me laugh." And she said, "Just a minute, please. I have a folder of cartoons. I'll go get them and read them to you."
Oh, wow.
And that just amazed me that she had saved things that made her laugh over the years. And of course, by the end of that conversation, we were both hysterical. So, you know, having a person like that on our team is a powerful, powerful thing to do. And sometimes it takes us a while, of course, to connect with that person. But our curiosity should also be about who can I find that will be that kind of collaborator informally with me. And of course, sometimes they turn into collaborations that benefit both our businesses.
Yeah.
And we might work together on projects. I did that several years ago where I just put it out and said in my mailing, "I'd like to do some Joyfully Jobless weekends around the country. Is there somebody who would like to work with me?" And I was really surprised at the response. And, you know, got to do seminars in places that I had never taught in or spoken before. And also, you know, got to hang out with this person who was working on my behalf. And the amazing thing, Nancy, was I think almost none of them had ever organized an event before, and they all were just spectacular.
So you're practicing our third step, which is auditioning your ideas.
Yes.
And you have found through your own practice that that is the way to go about doing it.
It's a lot less stressful than thinking, "Oh, I'm not sure this idea is ready yet," or oh, is this going to look stupid? Or it's thinking of it as an audition, which isn't the same thing at all. It's like, okay, let's try it out. And then afterwards, look back on it and evaluate how it went. What would I want to change? What really worked well? That sort of thing. And I was so fortunate when I started doing seminars in Minneapolis, OpenU was a brand new adult ed program, and they were just hungry for things to put in their catalog. And so anything I would propose as a class, he'd say, sure, and put it in. Hmm. And sometimes we'd have, you know, there'd be an idea that I'd think, yeah, I really like this one. And we get a really big response to it. And then I'd go in and actually do the class. And on my way back to my car, I'd think, that wasn't as much fun as I thought it was going to be.
Mm.
Or sometimes we'd, you know, have kind of a different situation where we didn't get a great response, but I thought this still has possibilities and potential. And I'd go home and, you know, tweak it and we'd try it again, maybe with a different title or focus or something. And then, you know, it would start to all come together. But there was no way just sitting at my computer that I could know where the really best ideas were that were going to become the foundation of my business. I, you know, the first time I did Making a Living Without a Job, I thought it was so radical that we would have a very low response. Mm. And I got a call a few days ahead from Bob Walling, the director, saying, you better know how to make a living without a job because we have twice as many people who want to take it as we've got room for. So we immediately added a second one. And I thought it was so radical for Minnesota. And it, you know, it turned out being the foundation of everything I've done for the last 25 years.
Yeah. So additioning ideas is really very critical in the process of determining which ideas you can progress on and which ideas you won't and what you end up liking doing. You know, you could see yourself doing it over and over again. I know.
Exactly.
I know in the writing process, yeah, editors say, you know, like when you're coming up with your book title or articles or that you're writing, include content from the book that you're writing and, you know, get feedback on every part of the process because that will help you. Or if you teach what you're writing about, you know, that's even better because you can see how the students are responding. And that's what you've done over and over again with all your workshops and classes. And you've done that your whole life.
Yeah. And it's really powerful. And, you know, and another thing about doing programs and things of that sort, I also discovered who my ideal students were.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because in the 90s, the independent adult ed programs were popping up all over the country. And that really became the basis for my teaching. And it was just a perfect match for me because these were mostly run kind of mom and pop businesses, and they attracted students who were curious, lifelong learners, but didn't really want to spend 6 months going to class. 3 hours, get the basic information, and decide if they wanted to, you know, take it farther or not. So it was kind of a, you know, a dual experiment for them and for me. And it was just such a wonderful, wonderful adventure. And then the internet came in and the adult ed program started vanishing, which made me very sad. There's still one in existence in Denver. And so I have taught with them all along until the last 19 months.
Oh, because people are getting all their information online,
right?
And with online classes versus in-person classes.
Yes.
Well, and the other side to what we've been going through is students have realized how important it is for them to be able to be in social environments with their peers learning something.
Exactly. And in fact, when I first started doing Making a Living Without a Job, I opened the class by saying, how many of you came here tonight without telling anyone where you were going? And almost everybody would raise their hand. And I'd say, look around the room. There's 30 other crazy people too. And I think there is something when we're in a room with people exploring the same subject.
Yeah.
That's like an invisible addition to what we're learning. It kind of verifies that, yeah, this is something that's worth looking into.
Yeah, and it's how you develop friendships. And yeah, there's just so many benefits that we're finding that we needed reinforcement of.
Yeah.
That we are. Go ahead.
And I love what Seth Godin says. He says that the real things that happen at conferences happen in the hallways. And I get exactly what he's talking about. You know, it's that encounter with other people that we didn't know before we got there, and all of a sudden we find a connection. So that's incredibly important part of our journey.
Excellent. So we have three steps that we've talked about as you embrace your internal detective or become a detective of your ideas or becoming an idea detective. How about that?
That's all right. Good.
Yeah. How many ways in which can I say this from what angle? But we've talked about finding your curiosity, about inviting ideas, and also making sure that you take it to the next step, which is auditioning your ideas. Because without auditioning your ideas, you don't know where to put your money behind your idea.
Exactly.
Because you don't know what people are going to buy. So you need a way, an avenue, an approach, a strategy in which you're checking that out. And I love the auditioning part because then you don't get so emotionally tied to an idea and you're not so crushed if no one else buys the idea like you did.
Right.
And if you're stuck in inertia, the best book that I've found on that is to work through it is The War of Art. Break through the blocks and win your inner creative battles by Stephen Pressfield.
Yes. I have read that one multiple times.
Yeah. So Stephen Pressfield is phenomenal. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And I hope you go out and put together a process of the first three steps. Find your curiosity, have a way to invite ideas every day. And I liked how Barbara mentioned when she gets up in the morning, she asks herself two questions. What's missing and what do I want to change? And those are ways in which you start your brain working on ideas. Your brain needs something to do, something productive to do. And that's a great strategy. And then once you get your ideas going and you find a few that you really feel are the nuggets you want to addition to others, start additioning your ideas and get feedback from other people. And you'll either go deeper into the idea and refine it and find an avenue and an audience for it, or you'll go back and trash the idea and start over. And so in our second conversation, we're going to talk about step four, step five, and step six in how you can become an idea detective using several different strategies. And step four will be how to stay constantly curious no matter what. All right. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks so much, Barbara. Love our energy and our conversations and your experience and all that you bring into a wonderful, nurturing conversation that's full of lots of ideas.
It's fun talking with you, Nancy.
Okay. And Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. Thank you for being here, capturing all of this. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a WeMentor lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.